Yes, it is hot and humid, and what better time to have a cool guy like Grant Peoples in studio with us talking about his latest project. Well known to this community, we're going to have him with us in the second hour. Kay Dennis is going to talk with me about this remarkable book that chronicles the stories of families who survived Hurricane Michael. You stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widden started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widden Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widden because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widden Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widden wanted, and it's been the Widden way of doing business for over 70 years. Widden Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widden Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or WiddenGlass.com.
It's a pleasure to have you with me on this occasion, when in fact we have lots to talk about in relation to the heat and the humidity that comes as part of summer in the South. And we are in the Southland, are we not, my friend? In fact, when you listen to this conversation I'm having with Grant Peoples later in the show, you know, he talks about Tallahassee being in the deepest of the deep South. Well, in fact, it really is. And so for many of us who have grown up in the area or have been here for any length of time, and I mean for more than a couple of decades, it becomes a way of life for us, isn't it, that you accommodate during the summer. Now, a lot of folks just don't have the capacity to endure all of this, so they'll take up residence of the parts of the country. A lot of them head up to the mountains in Tennessee or Carolinas and such, or they'll head west to one of the beaches and kind of hang there for a few months. But in any case, those of us who remain have figured out ways to try to do our very best. Part of that, of course, is just running from your car to your house to your office, you know, or the grocery store. And isn't it remarkable, too? At least I do. I'm out there in the yard working like an idiot. That's the other part of this, right? Survival includes making sure you're up at like 4:30 in the morning so that you can get whatever done you need to. Because, you know, by 8, 9 o'clock, yeah, it's a whole different story. And certainly if you're out there in the, you know, let's say the mid-afternoon, brother, you're just asking for it. So, of course, all of those appropriate admonitions, like, you know, don't underestimate the power of the sun to cook your guts. I think that's on a set of towels that I have somewhere. But stay hydrated is the admonition I was thinking of. And what's remarkable, too, a lot of men, especially in the South, struggle with getting enough water. And my goodness, if you work outdoors, if that's how you make your living, nobody needs to tell you. You learned this a long time ago. But it's idiots like me who get out there on the weekend or doing some kind of project outdoors, you know, and we're wondering why we're feeling faint or why we've got kidney stones that are driving us crazy. Yeah, you're not getting enough water. Well, I always thought I did, and my wife kept telling me, no, no, you're not. So then I talked with my doc, and he's like, no, you need to be drinking a gallon of water a day. A gallon of water a day. I'm thinking, there's no way I can do that. Well, this is now, you know, a few months back. I have to tell you, I've gotten into that pattern where if I don't drink that much water, and I do keep a gallon jug there handy, I just keep working through it. Every time I, you know, pass by, I'm filling up my glass, and yeah. But good news is I'm feeling great. Actually helping me lose some weight, which is always a good thing. Better for me. And I'm not, you know, not worn out, but I am being cautious too. And I hope you will, as you think about these intense periods of heat and humidity. Yeah, don't do that. You know, there's a reason why a lot of cultures practice a mid-afternoon retreat, either a, you know, siesta or afternoon tea or something, where you can just get out from under, you know, the onslaught of that. It can hurt you. In fact, I've had friends that ended up in the hospital. You probably have too. You know, heat stroke or whatever. And that is not cool. You know, you can cause yourself some serious brain damage. And when you're dealing with a guy like me, yeah, I mean, I'm working from a deficit as it is. Cannot afford to lose too many more of those brain cells. Isn't that right, Carl? I think Carl's like over there going, finally, we have daylight. The man is coming to grips with his maladies and deficiencies. Not for the sake of Kay Dennis, my goodness, this is not a person who is in any way deficient, I think, when it comes to her abilities as an author, a contributor to understanding what in the world it was like for these people along the Gulf Coast, going all the way up into the areas around Mariana, into South Georgia. Hurricane Michael continues to be a challenge, and maybe you've caught some of the news. Only recently have they had some additional funding coming their way. And I mean, I've driven through there. Maybe you've done the same, even in the last few months. And there are homesteads that are simply demolished and they're not coming back. Or there are lots of houses that still have blue tarps over the tops of their, you know, over the roof. Yeah, it is, in fact, her contribution to us, Kay Dennis, this remarkable person I'm telling you about. She wrote this book that then gives us a firsthand account. And it was, in fact, just that. She spent her days talking with one-on-one these families, individuals, and what they had to struggle through just to survive. And that's still a quest. It is an ongoing quest to survive and to somehow recover. We can continue to look in their direction. Anytime you have opportunity to visit places like Mexico Beach, you know, Panama City, patronize some of those locations. Be honest with you, the businesses that suffered, many of those are gone. Those that remain could use our patronage. So encouragement there. Kay Dennis, our guest here in the first hour. I think you'll want to stay tuned for that. And as promised, we're going to have Grant Peoples telling us about his writing projects. As an author and poet and such, he has done a remarkable sort of turn, I would say, in the chapters of his life. And he'll talk about his music career as a songwriter and the foundation for his songwriting as a literist. He then became more interested in prose and poetry. So his writing now is taken shape in the form of upcoming publications beyond those he has already. And he has this neat little Patreon account where you can go and begin to support him in that. And this writing project really remarkably represents this dramatic shift in his life. It speaks to a topic that you and I have talked about in times past, and that has to do with reinvention, whereby we come to a juncture, sometimes in crisis, but a lot of times it's simply another door that opens. And unfortunately, I think too often times we consider that somehow a setback or a failure or unrealized expectations. Don't do that, because that's just not how life works. Reinvention is in fact the plan. It has always been the way that we grow as individuals and better discover who we are, why we're here, and what we're worth. That's what Grant Peoples is doing, and I think you're going to enjoy that conversation as well. You stay with me.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Hard to believe, but it has now been a year. A year of waiting, a year of recovery, a year of bewilderment, healing, and a year of frustration for a lot of people who have been affected by the challenges that continue to plague the victims of Hurricane Michael are being told over and over again in various ways and in various settings. Today we have with us Kay Dennis. Now, Kay is the Municipal Development Director for the City of Marianna. Clearly, smack dab in the path of this unprecedented hurricane. She is a member of the American Institute for Certified Planners. She's got her bachelor's in arts degree in political science, international affairs, and a master's in business administration and public administration, and then an advanced diploma in theology. Woman is accomplished academically, and a bachelor of arts degree in theology. She's now in the process of finishing her third master's degree and working towards her doctorate. 22 years of grant writing and city planning and experience, and 17 years of management experience. She says of herself, "In the position that I occupy at the City of Marianna, I have been submitting newspaper articles to the Jackson County Times, Jackson County Floridian, for about a year and a half, highlighting businesses in Marianna." She is married to Britt Dennis for 32 years, they are, and going strong. Two kids, two grandkids. She is a member of the Optimist Club of Jackson County, and I want to tell you, just at first blush, this woman is an optimist. Let's welcome Kay Dennis to the show. Hey, Kay.
Hey. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad to have you with us. And you have this book entitled Surviving Hurricane Michael, A Community's Story of Devastation. Tell us about that.
I'm in the process of finishing up the book, and right after the storm, Hayes Baggett, the chief of police, asked me to write a book, and I didn't get around to it till probably July because our permits in the office were increased by about 500%.
No kidding.
When I started writing it, I realized I have these stories from the businesses, and I have my own story, but there were so many others that needed to be included.
Yeah.
Like the people out working in the field, the first responders.
No kidding.
And
the linesmen and, yeah. and the social workers and all of these people, yeah?
Right. And so at this point, I've interviewed over 100 people and listened to the brave stories of men and women. Mm. And you know, it's hard for them to tell their stories. And we have a story in Mariana, and it's important to be heard.
You know, what's remarkable to me, Kay, is the connectivity. That is to say, how we really are all connected to these outcomes. Even the families of those service personnel whose parent is heading off to deal with another issue. And there has already been a loss of life there. We've lost a few along the way, haven't we?
Yes, we have. And Brian, a lot of these people worked tirelessly for days on end and without even checking their own homes. And we just can't say enough about them.
Well, and we've done this. We created this Hurricane Michael Heroes tribute that we have airing on local radio stations just as a way of, at the very least, you know, to say thank you, that your efforts are not unnoticed. And this goes out to the families of those people as well, because they're all in it. They're paying the price, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Every street in Jackson County was covered with trees.
Yeah.
And you couldn't tell what road you were on. We're a rural area with a small population, but people were getting lost because the road signs were down and there were no landmarks from before the storm that you where you could recognize
right.
where you were going.
Right. Yeah. From my conversations already, those who were there even the day after, things were so devastated. I remember one fella that I've known for many years, and this guy is a tough old bird. And he's on the phone with me, and he's starting to choke up as he's looking across the landscape. And I heard him say, "Oh my God, that used to be the factory where they built the flatbeds for these semi trucks. The building is gone. All that's left is the slab. Entire forests of pine trees completely leveled or snapped off, where you could see the force of the wind just came through like a scythe and just cut him off." He was absolutely beside himself.
Every person that I interviewed broke down. It's just very hard to to go through it, relive it.
Yeah.
But every time you leave your house, you see it again. A very wise person told me that in the recovery process, the ones of us who loved the natural environment of Jackson County and Mariana will be gone before the recovery is mm-hmm, over, mm-hmm. and the younger generation won't remember what was there. It'll probably take that long.
My goodness.
Yeah.
In fact, it's been described this way to me, that it looks like a war zone, right? It has that characteristic. Then that brings to mind this question of post-traumatic stress disorder. I would imagine we're seeing a number of those kinds of cases, right?
Well, I'm not a doctor, but every time there's a storm, everybody pays attention. And some people say that Mariana was complacent. But one of our city commissioners told me his grandmother moved to Mariana in 1821, and there hasn't been a storm like this to hit since then. So for nearly 200 years, there hasn't been anything like this.
Out of nowhere, folks, that's what happened. We can talk to our beloved Nancy Dignon, a meteorologist. She'll give you the scientific explanation for the physics involved, and of course all of the related variables that had to do with surface temperature of the water and air pressure and all that kind of thing. So you get this sort of clinical description, but then when you start to see its ramifications in the lives of those who have survived this storm, it is a story that will be with us forever. I hope you'll stay with me for just another few minutes because we're going to continue this conversation with Kay Dennis. We'll be back right after this.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers Spacious Showroom, conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So here we are talking with Kay Dennis. She's the Municipal Development Director for the City of Marianna. When I recall from about a year ago, you couldn't have access to the caverns, and now they've been able to do that. Is that right?
Limited access.
Mm-hmm.
I call Marianna heaven on earth.
Really?
It's beautiful.
Really?
It's just so beautiful. The people are wonderful. Hmm. And the storm is one thing that's brought us all closer together. And
I would imagine.
It's a wonderful place to raise children and live.
In writing this book, you've been able to knit together the stories of these survivors. Is that an observation you've made, that people really have pulled together to help each other out?
Yes. Especially after the storm,
Everybody,
it was neighbor helping neighbor. Do you need some food? Do you need some water? Let's get our chainsaws out and clear the road. And then the churches, they all joined in and helped. Mm. And we had a lot of outside help, too, that we were very appreciative of. But I think it bound us closer, and all differences, they didn't totally go away, but nobody noticed them as much.
So for you, this is exploratory. I mean, you were as much a victim as anybody. You walked through it. You survived it. But then you begin to kind of peel back the layers a little bit, and you find yourself in conversation with others. What was that like for you, where you're having to kind of relive it yourself?
When I was writing the book, I recorded the interviews, and I would have to hear some stories, or I chose to hear some stories that where people were in a house and that it fell down around them, and how frightened they were. And just, or they went home after helping other people, and they didn't have a house. And it was their family home, and they had memories there. One man, his house burnt down after the storm. There's been a lot of fires. And so he was so happy to survive the storm, and then his house burnt down. It's just heartbreaking.
Yeah. And for all of these, two decades or better that you have lived in the area, right? So
I've lived there 53 years.
53 years. 53 years.
Yes, and when we hear a hurricane's coming, we have our little stash of water and canned goods, and we're ready. But honestly, I didn't think that we'd even lose electricity until the day of.
Well, and that begs the question, how would anyone prepare? How would a municipality prepare for this? I don't know.
I don't think there's really a clear way, but that's one thing that I touch on in the book. And even though no one had been through it or knew what to do, we had all these brave people making the right decisions, coming together, working together, and making things work.
Was there for you a sort of awakening, I guess, things that were more disturbing about the community? Were there aspects of it that were just sort of disappointing in the way that people were handling it? Were people like losing their temper and just kind of splitting up, pulling apart, or was it just the opposite?
It was just the opposite. Every single person that I talked to said, we were just so blessed. We were so grateful. They were just so happy just to be alive, even though they may have lost everything.
We've done a lot of investigation with guys like Alex Workman and his wife. They've been over there in Mexico Beach chronicling a lot of their work and interviewing folks. But the recovery efforts are slow and painful.
Well, when FEMA visited last week, they said we've come a long way. And I have to say we have come a long way. But yes, it's slow. And you have to drive by it every day. And so even if you go home, you're in your house and everything's okay. When you go out the door, you see it. Every single day when you go home, you see it. And it's very hard for people.
You mentioned the obliteration of all of the landmarks and the street signs and all that sort of thing. So there was this, I guess, a destruction of all of those familiar points of reference, right? So you'd have some sense of where you are. One friend of ours was over there the day after, and she called me, and she's crying, and she said, people are standing in vacant lots in groups of 20 and more. They don't know where to go. They're just standing there. They're like zombies. They're in shock. And there's no orientation. So a lot of them then had to find their way to a local church. And I think there were three churches, maybe more at that time, that were sort of the staging area for people who were looking for shelter, right? But because their car is gone, the gas stations are gone, they had to walk. And some of those walks were 20 miles.
Right, under power lines and down trees. And I had one lady, a single mother, who was afraid she was going to lose her children because of her home was devastated and her car was gone.
You know, one of the conversations that we had early on was the death toll. And it was, in this woman's estimation, understated. They were estimating somewhere in the 20s or 30s, 20, maybe 30 people. And she said, no, that's not going to be accurate. Though a lot of people waited and thought they could see this thing through. But when that wall of water arrived, it just took them away. And I think that there are a number of folks that were stunned to realize that they couldn't overcome the force of this event. Yet those who have survived have found within themselves a resource and in one another. You mentioned FEMA. There was a bit of delay there too in the funding, which had to be additional insult upon injury, I guess you'd call it.
A lot of things have to be funded up front for a small town. That's difficult.
Yeah. And I guess the question was whether or not the federal agency was going to be able to release those funds. So this one woman said, well, we're just waiting on Congress to sign the check. And that took a number of months, I think, before that all began to come. At this point in the recovery, I mean, have you got a sense of where you are? You've already said, and it's been observed, it'll be decades before the area recovers. But in terms of day-to-day and getting some of these folks back online, would you say you're halfway there or less or more?
Maybe halfway. We still have people living in terrible conditions. We still have blue tarps everywhere. I talked to a contractor yesterday, and he's booked out to 2021. Some of our contractors left and went down to the coast because they could get more money there. But a lot of our good contractors stayed. What I would tell people is if there's a storm coming, don't stay. Because if anything happens to you, people can't get to you to help you.
Right, right.
And I heard so many stories about people being injured or in the hospital bed and the roof's falling on them. And the workers, they cried about it too. They wished they could come and help, but they couldn't get through the roads. And that's why evacuation is so important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember folks that were driving I-10 and looking for that exit and finding out you can't get off at that exit. You got to keep going
right. Because
the exit was blocked.
Right.
Yeah. 53 years you've been in this community. How has your role changed in that now that you've made your living as this municipal planner, right?
Right.
And you're writing this book. What does your daytimer look like?
Oh.
How do you spend your time now?
Not much free time right now.
I was going to say. Yeah. Talk about planning. You're planning out through the next 10, 15 years. Maybe you're just trying to plan for the next day, huh?
Yes.
Day by day. Well, her name is Kay Dennis. She's our guest this morning, Municipal Development Director over there in the city of Marianna, talking about post-Hurricane Michael recovery. You stay with me. We've got more Tallahassee Talks.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom. Conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio. And you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
The book is entitled Surviving Hurricane Michael, A Community's Story of Devastation, Survival, and Recovery. It's going to be coming out here in the next few weeks. The book documents history through the stories of survivors and highlights the human side of what took place during and after Hurricane Michael coming through the Marianna community. How has it been, or how have those communities around Marianna behaved? I'm particularly interested in the Tallahassee community proper. We'll call it Tallahassee-Leon County, because there have been efforts made to keep the topic fresh. There are groups of business people and political leaders, right? Civic leaders and such that have organized to try to keep the conversation alive. But has that made any real impact in outcome? I mean, are you seeing trucks coming in every day with loads of whatever you need, or how is that working?
Not anymore. We're not. We have a recovery group that's helping a lot of people.
And are those locals? They're recovery locals. Group, just local people.
Yeah. At first, probably the first 6 weeks, we had a lot of people coming from out of town with food, supplies, fuel. That was something you needed. Generators, because it was so hot. Now we don't have that so much. It is important to keep the story alive, and many people, I hear it every day, think that we're the forgotten area, that Marianna's been forgotten because we're not a population center. There hasn't been any big fundraising activities with movie stars or rock stars or anything over there trying to help us out. But our community also is in a low socioeconomic part of the country, and so they need help more than ever. And we do have concerns about people moving away. For some people, they didn't have insurance, or maybe they had, the people were renting and the homeowners decided not to rebuild, and we don't want people to move away. We need to keep moving forward and try to rebuild the city.
It's a remarkable system that in and of itself has all of those sorts of interactivity or interactive variables, right? You mentioned, okay, so if the rental home is gone, where does that renter go? And if the population decreases because people can't find a place to live, well, that impacts the workforce as well as it does local consumption. So now the farmer's not selling what few vegetables he's got left as much, right?
Right. But on the other hand, I think there are opportunities for rebuilding better than ever.
Ah. A community that is markedly agricultural, agrarian, an agrarian economy, and you say, for that matter, lower income households.
Right.
I try to put that in perspective, and I think, what if we woke up tomorrow morning and the state capital was gone? And I mean, if we were no longer the capital of Florida. That's been suggested, by the way, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it has.
Right. But think about that. Or Florida State University said, hey, you know what? We're moving. We're gone. And it wouldn't be gradual. You know, imagine the devastation that would occur if you displace the thousands and thousands of people who rely upon just those two institutions for employment. Right? 60%
right.
of the population works for government in some capacity, my last recollection of that.
Right.
Well, here you have an economic base that's disappeared. Yeah. Whether it's pine trees or cotton. Right. One family said that they were expecting a bumper crop with the pecans last year. And all of that was taken away.
It takes years and years to grow pecan trees.
So when with regard to the influx of people who showed concern, you say, well, in the first few months, yes. You know what that reminds me of? It's when the woman loses her husband and everybody comes to the funeral and they all come to the house and they bring the covered dish and a couple of days goes by, maybe a few weeks goes by, and then everybody just sort of forgets.
Right.
And she's there by herself every day. So keeping that thought in mind, that sort of scenario, what do we need to do? What can we do as a community? If we are your family member, we're your sister, your brother, your cousin over here in Tallahassee, what do we do to help Mariana?
That's a good question.
You've been asking that for now 12 months or better. I know.
I know.
Well, you wrote a book about it, so that's a good thing. Maybe we should just buy a million copies of the book and you can donate all the proceeds, right?
Well, I am donating the proceeds
wow.
to the city of Marietta.
Are you?
Yes, for recovery.
Wow.
So, yes, you could buy a bunch of books.
Let's do that. That's a good start anyway.
Yeah.
Will the book be available in local bookstores or online? How do we
Amazon.
Do it?
Amazon.
Okay. Well, let me repeat the title of the book, folks. Heaven's sakes. Here we go. Surviving Hurricane Michael, a community story of devastation, survival, and recovery. You have the author with us, Kay Dennis, Municipal Development Director for the City of Mariana. What else can we do? What can we, if we were to organize in some way, fundraisers, or if we mobilize?
Help us.
Yeah?
That would really help us.
Right. Do you have those who advocate on your behalf, they're over here
yes, I believe
providing
so.
That voice? Because I'm wondering if you have folks that go out to the local churches, if they're showing up on a Sunday morning and say, hey, I'm so-and-so, I'm from Mariana, here's our story.
Oh, I don't think we have that. I think we have people here in Tallahassee that advocate on our behalf, mm-hmm. but... Yeah,
but they're doing that idea. Where? In you know, City Hall or with the legislature?
Yeah, with the legislature.
Yeah. Yeah, but see, that's slow moving, man. I mean, that's the Mississippi River there. I'm just thinking we need a ready force. We need, right, boots on the ground kind of action.
Yes, we do.
Okay, so we've got to figure that out. All right, folks, well, there's your challenge. If you want to help the city of Mariana, if you want to help Kay Dennis, if you want to help all of our recovery and help yourself, let's figure out how we can be a contributive part of this remarkable story that is chronicled in this book, Surviving Hurricane Michael, A Community Story of Devastation, Survival, and Recovery by Kay Dennis, our guest this morning. Kay, please stay in touch with us.
I will.
We'll continue this conversation.
Thank you, Brian.
Yes, ma'am. The remarkable story of Kay Dennis and those survivors of Hurricane Michael. You stay with me. We've got more after this break.
Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Widen Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Widen Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Widen's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Widen is known for taking care of business. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back to the second hour of this here fine radio show that you love so much. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. Provided for you on a continued basis now for 10 years. Can you imagine that? Carl was a child when we first began. Isn't that right, Carl? I mean, 10 years, let's see. You were what, 12? I don't know. No, he's all grown up and all that, but it just is remarkable to consider how many places, times, and people we have been with this show. And I think what I find most rewarding, I guess, has to do with the breadth of, is that the right thought here? The span of the lifestyles of these people and all of the various walks of life that they have brought in representation, right? So people who are everyday common folks, will say laborers, people who work in administrative capacities with municipalities like a Kay Dennis, artists and musicians and of various kinds, visual art, performing art, people like Grant Peoples, those who have at the same time been in positions of, we'll say, leadership, whether in community service, in government to some capacity. I mean, even the First Lady of Florida made her way to our humble studios at one time, Ann Scott. Those stories that have come up from all of that, the people in leadership in athletics, Mickey Andrews, Bobby Bowden, these are people who have a kind of common thread I have found in that their passion for their particular endeavor is really outweighed by their passion for individual growth and development among those people that they serve. I mean, that's what I find most interesting about somebody
in government, for example, in some of our local county and city commissioners. And honestly, I have talked with those who afterwards I thought, yeah, I'm not sure that our individual needs are really on the top of that person's list. And then you come across somebody who that's all they're about. And that was the only reason they ever had any interest in being in public service, in running for office. You know, because they found that there was something about what they brought to the table that could contribute to our welfare. It, unfortunately, I have to say, hasn't been the common finding here. But among those who I think walk in that way, who carry out their function in that fashion, it's delightful because you find out that there are personal experiences they have had that they bring to their own experience in providing us leadership in a way that's almost a kind of curation. You know, they're looking out for what it's like for you and I to have a family, to have a business, to have ambition, to have goals and objectives, to want to further our education, or really just do a better job as a parent or a spouse, right? And they look at how it was for them as kids, or they look at how it was for them when they were trying to finish up their education, let's say, or when they were ready to start a business. And they take those experiences and apply them. They bring forward their own insight. You know, it's the part of life, I think, where we contribute most significantly. It does require that we get a bit more transparent, perhaps, than we're comfortable with. We have to be willing to share some of those parts of our lives that represent disappointment or hardship that we endured. We have to be willing to embrace that to some extent. I made a mistake. I learned from that mistake. And here's the wisdom that I want to impart, or just the knowledge. The experience itself brought me better in touch with what I can do for myself in the future. I'd like to share that with you. But that does require a kind of humbling, I suppose. Certainly transparency or honesty. If I can transition here, I'll tell you, that is exactly what our Tallahassee Prepared campaign is all about. It's about taking experiences from people like Kay Dennis, who was with us in the first hour. How do you prepare for a hurricane? An exit strategy is probably the best thing. You know, how do I get out of the way of this horrific storm that's unstoppable? You know, when it comes to a hurricane or tornadoes, you can do some things to prepare for this onslaught. Okay, so you don't want to have a lot of sheet metal laying around in the front yard. But while I say that sort of humorously, believe me when I say, driving through some of these parts of our county and seeing the stuff, you know, old lawn chairs and, my goodness, a wash tub or something, which becomes a missile. You know, this massive amount and the velocity of this storm weaponizes such things, right? A 2x4 becomes a deadly object. And with our Prepared campaign, we're advising each of us then to consider some of those things that we just walk past day after day. Things like, do you have an exit strategy? I mean, if you have kids at home and you have about 5, maybe 10, 15 minutes warning, if you're watching the weather and a tornado warning is in play and then it becomes a tornado watch, I mean, you're in imminent danger. Well, that is not the time that you want to start thinking about, well, let's see, what should I do? No, you want to have the vehicle gassed up, keys in, a rehearsed, at least talked about plan of action. You know, you have a destination in mind. You know, this is the best route for us if we need to escape. I'm telling you, so oftentimes it's that level of awareness that people lack. Check it out online. TallahasseePrepared.com is the website. It's an ongoing work. It's year-round because, honestly, isn't it true in Tallahassee? Severe weather is with us all year long. We'd like to say that being prepared isn't a season. It's an attitude. So while we are in a season where hurricanes are more likely, have you noticed? Couple of thunderstorms roll through, a tropical storm. How about heat and humidity? How about freezing temperatures, lightning strikes, flash floods? It's all there. But TallahasseePrepared.com is how you and I better stay informed, better prepared for severe weather. It's brought to you by our dear friends, Tallahassee's first family in glass, Wedding Glass, on South Monroe.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year. And the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge want to remind each of us to take the challenge by making an additional contribution and donating food.
As the school year comes to an end, many children no longer have access to school-based food support programs. As a result, supplies run low, while the needs for assistance is even higher. Join us in giving generously during this critical time of need. You'll be helping feed hungry children and families across our community.
Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
Very likely you know the name Grant Peoples. If you don't know the man, you know his reputation. He is a prolific songwriter and has performed professionally here and around the country for a number of years. But I would encourage you to get to know not only his work, but the man. And he, being a Tallahassean, a Tallahassee native, going back, I think we decided it's been 6, 7, 8 generations, something like that. He'll bring me up to date on all of that information. But the point in having Grant with us today is really in keeping with a conversation you and I have had often about life's challenges and changes, and even the business of reinvention, which I'm a big fan. And I think Grant Peoples is a guy who takes what's in his hand and looks at ways in which he can make that work, not just for himself, but for the people that he's a part of and are part of him. And so I won't waste any more time. Let me tell you, this is Grant Peoples, and he is our guest. How are you, sir?
Thank you, Brian, for having me.
You know, it happens that you and I haven't spent a whole lot of time, and I'm one of those people who, though having not really met you as such, we've seen each other in passing, no doubt. Right. You live in a place like Tallahassee long enough, you know, you've bumped into each other at the grocery store at least once or twice. And then you go, hey, I know the – don't you and I know each other? So this is an opportunity for me to kind of connect the dots, because I'm one of those folks who saw your involvement with the moon in its origins. Then again, can we ever forget Grant's ribs? Come in. I mean, we're just still savoring that idea. Your music, again, having performed here and around the country with great reception. And then taking on kind of another step here with this project that we're going to learn more about, and that has to do with you pursuing your writing craft and as a wordsmith, bringing us closer to those stories that you find worth telling, writing about. Let's start
with some of your early beginnings. You were a graduate of Leon High School.
Yeah, I graduated in 1975.
Right? Okay. So that puts you in league with some of my friends and colleagues who are of the same vintage. Now, for your sake, I will say I only got here 40 years ago. Yeah. So in 78, I arrived as a graduate student at Florida State University, having grown up in the Seattle area, right? Seattle University and such. I turned 66 here in May.
Oh, wow.
So that's we're not that far apart.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that gives me a little bit of understanding as to how much Tallahassee has changed in this last 40-plus years. And I think it's fair to say there's been a remarkable amount of change, some of it by design, by intention, some of it, I think, somewhat by default, the in-migration. When you look back through your beginnings in Tallahassee, high school and on, what when somebody says, tell us about Tallahassee, how do you answer that question?
Well, and it's funny because I travel around. It's pretty stunning how many people, if you travel around this country, don't know that Tallahassee is the capital of Florida. So I do I end up answering that question quite a bit. I tell them it's the deepest of the deep South.
Yeah,
it is as deep as you can get in the deep South, and yet we are a little bit of a, we have our universities here.
Yes.
So I have always really enjoyed that mixing. Tallahassee is a bit of a melting pot.
It is indeed.
And your story, I can't tell you how many friends I have that have your story. You know, they just come here to school and they never leave.
Never left.
And there's a reason for that. And I'll also say that, I believe in immigration. I believe that, people moving into areas are what really make it special. And
because of the diversity.
And because of the diversity. Otherwise.
Or need for it.
You're in an echo chamber. Yeah. And I've very much lived in an echo chamber right on up through my, my senior year in high school. Yeah. And had I not gone off to school, I went off. It was when I actually went off to school. I went to Appalachian State in Boone, North Carolina.
Gotcha.
And it's the coming home is when I really realized what the value of this place was.
And let me interrupt you. In those days, were you thinking about a career in music?
No. I've always, from the very beginning, I had a dream of a career about words. I started out messing around with words when I was in third grade. And I blame my mother for it because my mother is kind of a neat freak. And I always say I would have been an artist except for my mother. But making art made a mess, and she didn't want anybody to make a mess. But I figured I could scribble out words and keep them in a tablet. And so that's really how I got going.
Interesting.
And I started in high school. I had a friend named Hugh Roche who picked up a guitar and started learning some Bob Dylan songs. And it really, it made a mark with me. And so I started writing songs. Didn't have a guitar. Mm-hmm. I wasn't doing that, but I had the lyrics. And then it wasn't until college I actually picked up a guitar for the express purpose. I didn't want to learn how to play Smoke on the Water. I had a song I wanted to write. Very similar. I had a friend wanted to write a book, and the first thing he did, he was going to write a book. He went out and learned how to make a book because he said, I know nobody's going to publish it. So he went out and learned to make a book. So it's very similar to
that. Very practical approach to a career in writing.
Yes.
But that has been, for you then, the literary, we'll say, talents that you possess coming through the songwriting that you've done. And now you're at a juncture where you're going to say, yeah, I've done enough of that, or at least a lot of it for now, and I really want to pursue writing for writing's sake. Is that fair?
I mean, that's what I'm doing right now. I am working as a writer. Every day I get up and I'm sitting at a typewriter and I'm writing words. Now I'm still touring. I'll be in Texas next month, and I'm going to Carolina at the end of this month.
So you're not hanging it up,
I'm not hanging it up. I'm pulling back maybe just a little bit. And of course, the pandemic gave me an opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
And
What do you do when all of those venues are saying sorry?
Well, I mean, but the you know, I consider myself a writer more than a musician. You know, I'm a, even after playing for, you know, 40 years, I'm a rudimentary guitar player. And the only reason I ever learned is because I had something I wanted to say. And me getting into long form writing now is really, it's just based upon the fact that there's things I wanted to say and I couldn't stuff them in a song.
We're talking with Grant Peoples. You've learned more in the last 10 minutes that you probably had not heard before, and I want you to stay with me because we got more with this man. We'll be back right after this.
Hello, I'm Brian Cerny, host of Tallahassee Talks Radio.
And I'm Coach Sue Semrau.
The food assistance charities in Tallahassee need our help during this critical time of year, and the businesses sponsoring the Tallahassee Food Challenge
want to remind each of us to take the challenge. Wooden Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Wooden Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals
who offer many children only the best. No longer have access
like Wooden's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Wooden Glass. We'll help you design it and install it.
You'll be helping feed hungry children and families.
The first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781
to learn how you can help and where you can donate. Your donation will go directly to these charities that do so much to help the needs of so many.
Take the challenge. Fill a bowl.
Feed the hungry. Do it now. Go to TallahasseeFoodChallenge.com.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back with Grant Peoples, a songwriter, pursuing a career in writing, doing more of that sort of thing, publishing. And now you have published or are about to publish. Tell us where you are with that whole
process. I've published a few books of poetry. That was the thing I... About 7 or 8 years into songwriting, I kind of went back to poetry and started writing a lot of poetry in pretty much all of the shows I do now. Right. I throw some poems in there.
Right.
What happened was is during the pandemic in March of 2020, I began a series, a broadcast on YouTube called Clay Tablets. I have a friend by the name of Matthew McCarran. He's an artist, and I mean, it was in early March, and I had just canceled. I canceled 39 shows in just one day. I just went boom. You know, this ain't going to work. And I was talking to Matthew, and I said, you know, that's disappointing, but I think we're at a really critical time now, and I really feel that, you know, that us as artists, you know, there's kind of a responsibility that we have now because, you know, I said, you know, 500 years from now, they're going to look at, they will do like we do, and we're going to look at art to tell us what was, and he said, yeah, it's just like clay tablets. And when he did, boom, it went in my head. And just a fast forward, we began a monthly YouTube live broadcast at Pete Winter's studio, and it was art, it was poetry, I was doing some writing, we had video and news, and I did some singing, and I did some interviews, and I decided at the beginning I was just going to do it for 12 and
just to see how it goes.
Just to see how it goes. But I had really good followers. I had good followership. Is that a word? Viewership.
And I think followership.
I like followership. Can we make that word?
That's a followership. Good word.
Yeah.
Okay, that's your word.
That's my word for the
write
day.
Write it down.
Followership.
File the papers. Get it copyrighted.
It makes absolute sense. And in that process, I was doing a lot of writing for the show. And I began running, and I decided I was going to run a marathon, the Tallahassee Marathon, in February. And so I started training for it, but right around November, they canceled it. And I said, well, I'm just going to run my own marathon. So I went out, and I went out and designed my own course, starting in St. Mark's, and I came all the way up the trail, started right there on the bank of the St. Mark's River, ran up the trail, ran around Tallahassee to my house. It was 26.2
miles. Doing the Forrest Gump thing.
Yeah, it was just my own thing. And in the process of doing this, I was running around Tallahassee, you know, like measuring out from here to here because I wanted to make it exactly the 26.2 miles. I started running by places that I had known all my life, but you know, when you're on foot and you're running by them, they look different. And I started getting interested in writing a book that about the run, but it's about where I ran by. So it's very anecdotal. I have a story. I was at Leon High School in 1972 when we had a, what they called at the time, a race riot there, and I looked out my window. And when I was out running and doing this track, I was running by Leon, and I remembered this. So one chapter of the book is about what happened that day 50 years ago.
Incredible.
And I have another chapter about the Shell Oyster Bar and another chapter about Kent's Lounge. Did you ever go to Kent's Lounge?
In fact, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you made it out.
An experience, right?
Okay.
Right.
So, and there's
you had to do it at least once.
Right. I got a chapter about there in Shell Oyster Bar and
still
about
around.
Franklin Boulevard and what happened down there with those two young boys that drowned.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing right now.
Crazy.
And I'm also writing a short story.
Sort of an anecdotal history.
It's anecdotal. Yeah, but there's some. It's anecdotal, but I have to go in. Unfortunately, and this has been. I'm having to do some research, which, boy, that can take some fun out of writing. I can tell you. But I'm doing that, and then I'm also. I have a Patreon that I'm doing.
Oh, neat.
Which is a way to. And I'm getting, I'm writing a short story and releasing one short story a month to my Patreon followers to help sustain me about my offset of income.
I think I've got notes about that. Let me see if I can pimp you out there, little brother. So most importantly, shifting, this is from your press release I got earlier.
Yeah.
Personal creative content, stories, songs, photos, poems, videos, all available at this Patreon page. And they'll be posted there through July of 2022.
Right. It's not an evergreen kind of thing. It's just a 12-month thing.
So your comment here is, I'm tightening the circle of my social media life as I go into this other endeavor, and my hope is that everyone will consider coming with me. So these books, or the book, the stories, and the project then are explained at your Patreon site. Mm-hmm. And for those who may not be familiar, simple enough, go to Patreon. It's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon, just like it sounds, .com, and then / Grant Peoples.
Right. And it's also information. And my last name is spelled P-E-E-P-L-E-S.
Right.
Not Peebles, it's Peoples, so people do get confused with
right.
that.
Like multiple Peoples.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Well, in regard to the shifting toward this enterprise, how has it changed your daily, let's say, routine? I mean, are you out meeting with people more, or are you more in your studio?
Yeah, I am just at my, I have an office at my house. I moved into this house and I set up an office and I've never sat in it. I do everything at my kitchen table. So I set everything up in the morning, and you know, I'm always like having to move my laptop to put breakfast down, but everything happens in my kitchen. And it's, I try to get 500 words. I mean, I do get 500 words a day, which, boy, it sure does not sound like a lot of words until you sit down.
Try to knock it out.
Yeah, and sometimes it takes an hour and sometimes it takes 4 hours. But I try to get all of that done in the morning. And that is a part of the discipline that that is new. As a songwriter, you know, you're kind of walking around writing songs in your head. You can write a song while you're in the grocery store, kind of in your head, and you can pull out your phone and you get the idea. And so this is a very much more segmented, and then at the end of that, I'm kind of done with it for the day.
I wonder how much your mother's neat freakish influence is a part of that, because what I hear is not the we'll say stereotypic life of the musician who's just kind of floating around and yada yada, but here's a guy who has a work ethic and is applying that in a manner that keeps him within a structure that's internalized. It's not, I mean, nobody's calling you, your publisher isn't calling you to say, hey, where are you with this? This is you applying what was, I'm going to hazard a guess and say was invested in you as a kid.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of one of the harder parts about it as a songwriter, as a poet, you know, and when I'm on the road, I can write a poem today and go, oh, I'm going to read this next Friday night, or I can finish a song and say, I will debut this next week, and you can get that more immediate gratification from that. You can get some, and boy, there's not really with this. I have an editor, you know, and she's great. I get some feedback from her. My girlfriend reads some, but you know, they're all, it's. It's a whole different process.
Yeah. And a bit, as you it's implied, maybe more arduous.
Yeah.
And it can get real lonely too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And but it's been really good. It's been really good. And you know, I when I got started with the music in 2000, when I came back from Nicaragua, I was down there for 11 years. Mm. And when I came back, right around my 50th birthday, I had a kind of a little bit of an awakening that it was midlife, and I only had so much time left, and I had never made a CD. Bob Dylan had made 40 or something by that, but I'd never written a book. So
yeah, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, and so I was really late to the game, and I think that the way I have played. And I use that word as, you know, this is play. The way I have played has been very similar to, you know, someone who's come to a party late. You know, I remember like going to going to the fair and not getting there when all your friends do, and just like trying to get on every ride before it's all over and you have to go home. Mm-hmm. So there has, I have heard the ticking of the clock as far as my, you know.
Well, I should be quick to remind you that Aristotle's Academy, you had to be at least 40 years old before you were admitted.
Right.
So late to the game may be for some, but that's always compared to guys like Bob Dylan, who probably just didn't have anything else to do.
Well, maybe so. I do feel like a lot of it, though, is, and I had this with music, you know, I messed around with songs starting in 1970s. I went to Nashville as a songwriter. I was at Tree Publishing, and but I never really found my voice. I never really had a voice until I went out and got the experience that you know, living on that island for 11 years, and I just, when I came back, I felt like I had gone somewhere and learned something and had come back. You know, and I had something then at that point to relate and something to share, and I had a voice to say it with. And my writing voice, that would be my songwriting voice, but my writing voice kind of came out of me during the pandemic.
And we're glad you're here to help us better understand that whole experience for you. Folks, I've got Grant Peoples. You stay with me. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks.
Hi, I'm Jerry.
And I'm Pete.
And we're with the Jerry Thigpen Trio, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back as we talk with Grant Peoples, who has been regaling us with stories of his youth and his career in music, which is ongoing, and now kind of this additional chapter. I don't know if it's the next chapter, but it's certainly an additional chapter to what has been a remarkable journey thus far. And I'll say this, Grant, for those of us who are older than 40 and who may have yet come to that same realization that I haven't done anything with my life, I think you have encouraged us, because there's plenty of time when you consider that there really is no pre-existing agenda. It's really as life unfolds itself and you pursue at the moment those things. That's happening in business. I think it's happening in politics. It's happening in social customs. I mean, when I got to Tallahassee 40 years ago, everybody wanted to know where I was from and how many generations back I go and how much land
I apologize. I apologize for my community.
Well, you're true to your roots, man. I mean, that's exact. Hugh Davis used to tell me, yeah, we're back here 9 generations, and how his grandmother or somebody back there was still fighting the Civil War. And you couldn't mention Abraham Lincoln in her presence. I'm like, really? I'm from Seattle, so we don't really talk that way. Yeah. But you said at the beginning of our conversation, in the deepest part of the Deep South.
Yeah.
And when I consider what we are aspiring to now, whereby what I've dubbed a plantation mentality is really being challenged. And that plantation mentality says, hey, Grant, you're entitled. Because, you know, you own this, whatever this is, this domain, and I agree with you, and I'm not entitled, so I'm going to stay over here on my part, and you do your thing. The fact that I live in a dirt-floored shack, and you live in a mansion
It's just the way God intended it. Right. Now, people have said to me, but Brian, you know, there's rich and poor in every community. Right. But in our community, we have this sort of lingering thought somehow that that's just the way it's meant to be. And when you challenge people, at least I have, I've challenged people to say, why don't you get off that plantation and go out and just do something on your own? Oh, no, I couldn't do that. I would never do that. Well, here's a guy, Grant Peoples, who has gotten off the plantation after he got out of high school, I would dare say, and has just sort of pursued it from that standpoint.
Yeah, you know, that the thing about the belief thing is, boy, that's a kind of a recurring theme in so much of what I've done. Mm. I have made a record called Prior Convictions, and I believe I actually have a quote in there. It's a Joseph Campbell quote, and he says, "Thinking you know the truth is a certain form of insanity." Mm-hmm. Or madness, I believe he said, is the word he uses. Yeah, thinking you know the truth is a certain form of madness, because what happens is, you know, belief is a funny thing, man, because, you know, the as soon as we start believing, sometimes we say, I believe this, you know, I believe that they haven't done enough research on the vaccine and that, you know, it's not in, and therefore I'm not getting a vaccine. I don't think it's a good idea to do that. Once you do that, the minute you say that's what you believe, you begin construction. Not you, we, as this is the nature of the human beast, we begin constructing walls around that to protect that.
Protect the
and
belief.
We have this gate there. And if anything agrees with that belief, we crack open the gate and we let that thing in. And if it doesn't, we not only not let it in, we put up a bolster against that. Right. And I really think that the real essence of a liberal arts education is the ability to
question everything,
yep. And especially what
stuff
you believe,
that you disagree with,
right?
Well,
right,
the stuff you believe.
Or stuff that you believe,
more so,
yeah, and
right.
So, you know,
not an easy task.
It's tough.
I've taken up the opportunity to review the series that HBO put out years ago on John Adams.
Oh,
and you see those dialogues going on between Jefferson and Adams, and the two of them really wanting to stay friends.
Right.
Jefferson and Adams very much alike in that they were unrepentant in their resolutions. They said, this is what I believe, and if you can't handle that, then adios.
Right. Yeah, I really love that, and you know that whole series, and I use that example of John Adams defending those British soldiers who had, I don't know if you remember that, but you know, he had done that. He took a lot of flak,
a lot of heat.
Yeah, he took
and
a
then
lot of
repelled against the idea of going to war with France. And Hamilton is over there blasting him in the newspapers as this horrible human being because he wouldn't take up arms against the French. But he won the day because the French finally said, you know what? It was a family quarrel, okay? We're fine.
Right. And, of course, the French were about to have a whole bunch of their own problems right about that time.
Yeah, Napoleon was having his way. Yeah. Folks, if you've just joined us, we've got Grant Peoples here, and we're talking about a lot of different things, all of which have to do with this business of pursuing one's life and liberty and happiness. And for you, Grant, it seems to me that's taken you to different places. It's taken you to different endeavors. Sounds like a pretty rich, a pretty diverse sort of life. Are there things that you, at this point, I mean, you're looking back a little bit, no doubt, and you and I should probably both do that, that you regret? Are there things that you wish you had done, or wish
somebody say one day, I don't regret having done anything. There's some things I haven't done that I regret having not done.
Yeah.
But no, not really. You know, I mean, I think it was a Walt Whitman it said one time, you know, life is not about finding who you are. It's about creating yourself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think I've kind of been in that constant process of trying to just, create who I am. And So I don't really have any regrets. You know, and all the mistakes I've made have been some of the best things. You know, the results of the mistakes I've made have been some of the best things.
I would agree. I said to a friend the other day who was having this conversation with me about who am I, and I said, well, you know, some people believe that we are what we have become, and I said, I choose to believe that we become who we are.
We become, yeah.
We become who we are. That there's something very, very fundamental, very critical early on in our existence, and that will pursue. That I should say persist. That will have its way. You can kick at it all you want to, but you will become who you are.
Right. And you will become that. And I think we become that a lot sooner than we actually feel. You know, I think by the time you're 40, man, by the time you're 40, who you are is pretty much. And now
pretty
what you become,
evident.
You know, what you can.
What you do with it.
Right. It might be something else. Yeah.
Folks, my hope is that you will take opportunity to become more familiar with this man and his work, especially visit that Patreon account we mentioned earlier. Go to patreon.com, and then it's /Grant Peoples, P-E-E-P-L-E-S. Right. Grant Peoples, our friend and our guest today. Thanks for being
with
us.
Thanks so much for having me, and I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Folks, that's what we do here. We are the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat Radio, Tallahassee's radio to the world, featuring all local musicians playing their original songs. That is the sound of Tallahassee. You'll find them online at moosemagnificat.com. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.